listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 118 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is The Bolt.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hey.
Chris.
Virtual Chris.
That's right. If you saw the setup we have right now, you'd laugh. It's quite hilarious. But Chris is on the other side of the country, so he's joining us via phone and computer, so we can see him.
Yay. It's a virtual roundtable.
That's totally right.
He's actually, we are kind of sitting in a circle with the laptop on one side.
Yeah, so we can look at him. So it's like he's with us. He's on the table. So
it's been since 2011 since we met around the
that's right
table of any kind, virtual or real.
That's right. So we figured it was time. And we should say right off the top, one of our listeners named Adam, he works at Lexicon, and he heard our sob story about only owning an XLR cable. That would be our first purchase for the podcast. Everything else was borrowed gear or my own gear from home. And so he sent us this very nice Lexicon interface that allows up to 8 inputs. So it's making it a little easier for us to pull this together.
Yeah, that's how we figured out how to somehow get Chris from across the country to be sitting here with us today.
Yes, because before we only had 2 inputs, and so that was just wasn't an option. Now we've got up to 8, so we can have up to 8 people around the country all talking.
We haven't exactly gone pro, but it's just one step in that direction.
Yeah.
No, it's still lo-fi, but as far as like the look and feel of what we're doing here, but this nice Lexicon unit is actually, it sounds really good.
Yeah, it does.
It's a big improvement from what we were doing. So we thank you, Adam, for that. And if anyone else wants to send free gear, we'll gladly.
Yeah.
But lots of things have gone on, and since we last chatted, it seems like every month, Facebook or Google or Apple is pulling a fast one. So
yeah, lots of changes.
Yeah. So
sometimes all in the same week.
Yeah, sometimes all in the same week. And I think we're going to call this episode something like The New Big Three, because, you know, there's the big three record labels that everyone always talks about, but nobody really cares what they do much anymore except, you know, how they're trying to survive. That seems to be the storyline. But so much of what Google and Facebook and Apple are doing really affect the music industry. And so that's going to play a big part of our news coming up.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 Music. News.
Last fall we had Google Music. Now that has become Google Play. Google Play is the company's biggest launch since Google Plus, and it's built on some of the same principles. First, here's what Google Play is. It's a web-based system for buying and consuming content, from ebooks to music to movies to apps to games. Basically, anything you'd want to run on a mobile device or in a browser. It replaces the Android market for purchasing apps, books, and music. It also incorporates the storage and playback features of Google Music and other Google content products and extends them with new features and enhanced unified user interfaces. Play lets you sync files from device to device so you can buy content once and use it anywhere on your Google account. Anywhere your Google account lets you sign in. It's an online store, but it's also a cloud-based storage system. Google Play will let you store up to 20,000 songs in a web-based account you can access from anywhere, free of charge. In addition to storage, you'll be able to buy new music from a library of millions of tracks. You'll have access to nearly 500,000 games and apps for the Android mobile OS, as well as large ebooks selection and movies to rent. It remains to be seen if this new format will give them a fighting chance against iTunes and Amazon, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. Even after the death of Steve Jobs, Apple continues on with their trademark product announcements with the recent announcement of the new iPad. The new iPad features a faster chip and a Retina display first seen in the iPhone 4. Apple also announced an upgraded version of GarageBand for the iPad that adds more features previously only found in the full Mac version. Months ago, Facebook rolled out its new timeline format, which drastically changes the look and feel of the Facebook wall. The focus of the rollout was geared toward personal pages, so it was unclear whether or not Facebook would make the change to the Facebook pages as well, which are used by bands, musicians, and companies. But we now have that answer. At the end of March, Facebook will force all bands, musicians, companies, and everyone else using the Facebook page format to adopt the new timeline format. We have a blog post and video detailing the new features we'll link to on the podcast blog, but the one change that has many people upset is the removal of the default landing page. In the timeline format, you will not be able to set a default landing page for new visitors, so all that fancy marketing you required new visitors to see is now pushed to the background. Facebook says the new timeline format is about telling the story of your brand, so when viewed through that lens, the format starts to make a little more sense. The main issues remain this: how much time should I actually invest in Facebook when they seem willing to make drastic changes on a whim? And finally, here at CD Baby, we've had a series of new product launches, the latest being iTunes weekly trending reports that are free to all artists using CD Baby for distribution. You can now log into your account and see weekly sales trends of your music on iTunes. Previously, you had to wait until iTunes closed out all the sales at the end of the month, which meant you might not know what you sold until 40 days after the fact. Trending reports include city, state, country, and postal code info, so it's a great tool to help you pinpoint your touring and marketing efforts and find out which ones have been working and having the biggest impact on your iTunes sales. And those were some of the big headlines. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, that Google Music transition to Google Play, you and I, Kevin, have talked to before about how strange Google Music seemed, because you'd go to Google Music on your desktop and there would be your music collection that maybe you've uploaded, but then if you wanted to buy anything, it took you to something else called the Android Market, mm-hmm. and then you bought stuff there, but then it would get transferred over to your Google Music, and it seemed incongruous, and it seems like now that they're doing this Google Play, everything's in one place, that you can listen to your music, buy music, it's integrated with the Android system on tablets and phones. It seems like now they have a competitive music store with iTunes, not necessarily something that's going to displace iTunes, but they actually have a media center basically that may or may not give them a run for their money.
I don't know if you mentioned this in the news part, Kevin, but also we should say that if your music was delivered to Google Music through CD Baby, then it'll be in Google Play automatically. They'll transfer it over.
Yeah, right. That's something to take note of, that it'll be there automatically. It's the same store, basically. I'm not sure if this was their plan all along or if this was a reboot, because the launch of Google Music seemed to me like a bit of a mess, like you were talking about. Well, it was hard to understand the storage. You know, the cloud was called Google Music. The store was called something else. They weren't really connected to each other. It was just really weird. And if you went to Google Music and you weren't on the Android market, it was just really hard to figure stuff out. Now it's simplified. It actually looks very nice. It's a good-looking store, and I think they'll do much better for themselves. The one thing that I was trying to find out, I didn't really search that hard for it, but I was trying to figure out if they slowly, kind of quietly, got rid of the artist interface where artists could log in and add their accounts, because I heard that
that was not widely adopted.
Well, they had four people providing support for that, and think of all the thousands of artists in the world that were probably contacting them. We have 40 people and they who handle it here at CD Baby, and they can barely keep up, and we have far less people accessing us than the hundreds of thousands of millions of, possibly several millions of artists trying to access their page on Google Music. So I have a feeling they might have just sunset that. I don't know. It might be out there. They just don't want people to know it exists. I heard they were struggling to keep up. But it's all now Google Play, and I think it's going to do much better for them.
I'm still waiting for my Android phone to update automatically. It hasn't yet, but
Yeah, and speaking
of... promised me it will soon.
Speaking of that, the other piece of the puzzle that Google's done is they bought a cell provider. I forget which one it was.
Is it T-Mobile?
Yeah, that's what it was, T-Mobile. And so people are speculating that they're going to... You know, they've come out with the iPhone killer many, many times.
Right.
Excuse me. That didn't actually kill the iPhone. But now that they can control the device and build something consistent over time, that they might actually be able to make a little bit run for that market now that they've got their app market and everything else in place. So we'll see. It'll be interesting what they do down there. With the iPad, to me, the most entertaining thing of that was all the rumors and how many of them ended up not being true and how many of them ended up being true. But the iPad...
still doesn't cook your breakfast.
No, but for artists, it does quite a bit now. And I think, you know, that's, to me, you know, the GarageBand update's okay. But the apps that people are creating for iPad, so many artists, it's starting to become, you know, like an instrument for them and that's a required...
Yeah.
For their performance.
There's a lot of DJs that use iPads now, and there's even things where you can like sync two iPads together. And...
Yeah. Well, on the Christmas tour we did, we had the iPad. We were using a MIDI keyboard. One of the keyboard players had a MIDI keyboard, and he was pulling the sounds from the iPad. So, and it's so small and compact, and so many cool things for artists to do, and makes the creation process a little bit more seamless and easy to, you know, just start creating as opposed to fumbling with technology.
Yeah. Well, and the main update for the iPad 3 was just screen resolution and like faster processors or something.
Yeah, that was one of the main, pretty much the main updates.
So if you want to get a cheaper iPad 2, it's not like you're missing out on a huge feature set.
Some of the new apps may only work with the new chip, but I doubt many of the music apps will be that way. I don't know. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see what people do, but I know for a lot of sounds and things and recording on the fly, it's becoming a pretty handy tool.
Might be a good time.
I posted a blog post on the DIY Musician blog last week, basically saying that in a lot of ways, the iPad's becoming a sort of all-in-one tool for touring artists. I noticed when I went to Folk Alliance last month that a lot of people were just traveling with their guitar, a backpack of clothes, and their iPad, and it did, you know, it gave them internet access so they could book, it gave them the camera and the video camera so that they could post content. All the apps, you know, just makes their promotion super quick. So people were going out on the road sometimes a year or two at a time and kind of booking as they go. And it's a crazy lifestyle, but people are doing it with such, you know, limited baggage.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to get an iPad. Because I'm flying somewhere tomorrow, and laptop's not big, but it starts to weigh you down after a while. And
well, especially it seems like if you're doing some traveling, like just the fact that a laptop folds into two pieces, you know, it mm-hmm. seems more likely to break.
TD Baby, we've had a lot of cool releases, and you know, we've been working hard, and the iTunes Trending Reports is a cool feature that people have been asking us for a while, and I'm glad that we were able to finally get that out. And that's just the beginning. We've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up that we won't speak about just yet.
Now, the iTunes trending reports, how's it work? It's not actual data of your sales. It's like sort of a forecast of your sales.
What it is it's data that it's sales, but they haven't been officially closed out, so they won't call them real sales. So, for instance, if someone does complete my album, basically what they don't want you to do is assume that someone bought the album, and so it's showing it, with the trending reports, it doesn't show you dollar amounts. It just shows you like these songs sold, these albums sold. And so some factors that can come into play is one, if they use the complete my album function where it wouldn't be a full album sale. So you can't just assume that that was a full album sale. Most likely it will be. Somebody could return the purchase. And that's pretty rare.
That back to the store.
Yeah, they take it back to the store.
This MP3 is broken.
But that could be an option. Also, fraud. You know, someone could make a bunch of purchases with a fraudulent credit card, and Apple would report that in the trending reports before they, you know, the official you know.
Right. So it's pretty much your sales. It's definitely enough to make decisions based on, you know, the information. But
and it's really handy. Like when we did this past Christmas release and we're out touring at Christmas, it was hard to tell what was having an effect, where this would let us know, hey, we saw a bump in sales in this region, because it shows you city, state. It gives you quite a bit of information. I was quite surprised iTunes gave up that kind of information. It just doesn't show street address or their name. So it gives you a lot more information than the actual sales reports do, because the sales reports don't tell you any of that. So
that's cool.
Well, moving on to discussion, I think kind of the interesting conversation, you know, we hadn't really gotten into the Facebook updates, but Facebook drastically changed their layouts and they're forcing it on everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of go through the, I don't know, was it denial, then anger, then acceptance, or is it anger, denial, acceptance? One of those three, but...
All right, not just frustration.
But you kind of go through that thinking, oh, man, especially when they remove away the default landing pages. That's one thing that really was frustrating. And there's some certain companies that it's really going to hurt their business for doing that. Some people that have operated strictly on Facebook.
Well, they seem to be doing a really good job of stripping away anyone's ability to advertise themselves. So they obviously want that money going through Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And Facebook stories and all those sort of things.
And it's just another example why we always recommend not to rely on a social network as your primary web presence.
Yeah, yeah, because this is a prime example because, as Chris said, the speculation is that they're doing all this to drive more people to use Facebook ads as they approach their them going public and offering stock to the public at large, and they need to show that they can make lots of money so they don't have the kind of thing happen where when Pandora went public, everyone ran out and bought it and then it became worth half price.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we saw artists spend thousands of dollars on getting their MySpace pages designed and thousands of dollars getting their Facebook landing pages designed. And it's like, spend that money on your own website and roll with the punches when the social networking's changed, because they may not be around forever.
Yeah. And this new format, it's one of those things where when you look at it at first, you're like, what am I even looking at? But once you kind of understand that they're wanting you to tell the story of your brand, I think it's a cool format. I did a little screen capture video that shows some of the features. We'll link to that and you can check it out. There's some interesting things that you can do with it, but to me, it's like, all right, Facebook, do I really want to go back through the history of our band and fill all this information in just for you to scrap it 2 years later, you know?
Yeah.
Well, one of the popular examples that's getting cited a lot now is Coldplay. They went back, and I'm sure they paid some, you know, intern or something to do it all, but they've backfilled all of their chronology back to their very first practice in the 90s. So there's photos of them practicing in their basement or something like that. And it's a really cool idea for a fan to go through and see year by year the development and new albums and new content. But yeah, who's got the time as an indie artist to really flesh out that chronology?
Yeah, plus, you know, there's no way to export that. You could do all that work and again, it's gone. And then it's like you can't import that timeline into anything else. So that's kind of where, you know, I'm hesitant to dive too deep into it. In the little video that I made, because I showed in the video updating the Small Town Poets page, and I put our album releases, which is, you know, once you create your timeline, you can select the date that you founded, your band was founded. And then once you select that date, obviously for most people, it's going to predate the existence of Facebook. You can go back all the way through that history and post photos and redate things. And so I went back and put in our album covers, and I thought, you know, this would be really cool. I could put in some of our videos and all that. But then I'm like, if they screw me again, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the idea of giving a history and telling the story of your band or your brand is something that we've been saying all along is really important in order to connect with your fans and give them content and allow them to connect with you. So it is a great tool in a lot of ways, you know, it would be worthwhile in a lot of ways to put all that information together. But whether you want to do it on Facebook in according to their rules, or whether you want to put that sort of content together on your own website and allow people sort of to access it and know that it's not going to be messed with, is something maybe you need to decide, you know, as far as what you want to spend your time doing.
Yeah. Which brings me to the kind of the broader idea for the conversation is that, you know, when I was younger and first picking up a guitar, the major labels were kind of the ones holding the industry captive. It was, you know, you had to get their approval. You couldn't really have a career without somebody selecting you and investing in you. Now that's not an issue anymore, but I'm feeling like we're moving into a time frame of being held captive by these big three. I haven't included Amazon. Amazon's obviously the second largest retailer for digital music behind iTunes, but they haven't really made these power plays like Facebook, Google, and Apple have been doing to kind of force their will on everyone. And I don't know, it seems like we're kind of at a crossroads where we got to choose whether we're going to accept that these folks are in charge or just go another way.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, it seems like you could go another way. There are other tools available. There's, you know, there's always Twitter or email or alternative social networks, or, you know, there's other ways to get booked. There's other ways to make connections. But the sort of ubiquitous, the fact that these tools are everywhere and everyone loves them, it's like, do you really want to ignore them? Or it seems worth putting a certain amount of energy into Facebook, but how much energy? I guess that's the question. I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, we've talked a lot about direct to fan, and that's a lot of people's sort of reaction to, you know, these big companies having so much control over their music, and taking, you know, big chunks of it. But at the same time, like, you know, letting iTunes take, you know, a certain percentage of your profits or whatever sometimes is worthwhile, because there's so many music buyers using iTunes products. You know, you basically cut yourself out of the equation when you don't use these, or you cut, you know, profit out of the equation basically by not using these companies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely still think you got to be everywhere. I think direct to fan might become a little bit more important. Some people, you know, a couple years ago, people were swearing by it, and usually a lot of people have backed off a little bit more. They're like, you know, yeah, you should be everywhere. And I think you got to, it's just weird that, you know, we're kind of back in a place where, on a whim, Google totally redoes their music store. And I think in this instance, it works out. You know, Facebook totally undoes a lot of people's marketing efforts and thousands of dollars people have put into their music and promoting it. And also they've built out features like, you know, the Spotify sharing and stuff, which some people love and some people hate, and just kind of forcing that on everybody. It's starting to feel like, you know, the only way to not be held captive to them is just to do it from your own website, which I guess has always been the case.
Right. I think it's a duplicity that'll probably exist for a while. You need to do both. You know, you don't want to lose sales because you're not selling through the major channels. You know, people want to get music on their iPods and iPhones, and lots of people have iPods and iPhones. So, you know, don't cut yourself out of that. But you also want to have control over your content, and you want to have control how your fans perceive you. So you need to create a space online where you have that complete control and you can connect with your fans directly, and you don't have to always rely on the whims of a social network.
Yeah. Well, and that I think might be where, you know, I've said before on the podcast, I'm not somebody that goes crazy about privacy issues online. But the thing also about uploading all this stuff into Facebook is you're giving up certain rights with your content, you know, and I think that's what a lot of people don't realize. But, and it didn't bother me in the past, but when, you know, I have to turn off things that don't broadcast everything I'm doing to everybody I know, as opposed to, like, I can't just open Spotify and listen to a track without it telling everybody what I'm listening to.
Right.
Not that I'm going to be listening to anything objectionable, but I just like, why does it have to do that? Why does everything...
Yeah.
I thought of that. I was listening to Tears for Fears one day, and I was like, you know, should I be embarrassed about this? And I was like, no, I like this song. I'm just going to proudly listen to it on Spotify. But I had to think.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. You're feeling peer pressure at home on your, behind
right,
your computer.
I had that same experience on Spotify the other day. I was listening to a band that I wasn't very familiar with, and I hadn't really decided if I liked them or not. And then all of a sudden, like, half their album appeared on my Spotify, on my Facebook, saying that I'd listened to all these songs, you know. And I still haven't decided if I like the band yet. I don't want everyone to think it's my favorite band because it's on my Facebook page.
It needs to be like two statuses, like streaming on Spotify and then like streaming suspiciously or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Streaming suspiciously. Totally.
I'm not sure about this, so don't judge me. I have it on random play. That's the thing. It's like it makes you not want to do any of that stuff.
I know. You just put it on play, you walk away from your computer, and then you come back to your Facebook page later, and it's just all Britney Spears.
That's what you listen to anyway, though.
One thing I was thinking of about the previous topic was, I'm not sure what the exact stats are, but I think very few people return to look at your Facebook page's homepage. Mostly they'll like you, and then they'll see your content in their news feed. So maybe spending all that time pimping out your timeline is not time well spent when you could be, like you said earlier, putting that effort into your own website, housing the content there, and then, of course, sharing it on Facebook where people will see it in a news feed but not worry so much about...
I kind of feel that way, at least so far, about the timelines. I haven't, like, actually engaged a whole lot as a Facebook user with other people's timelines. I still sort of prefer just the running feed that I can check on my phone and see what my friends say. And, I guess if I was super curious about a band or a person, you know, I might dig deeper, but what are the chances they filled it out?
Well, the interesting thing is, and we'll see how people react to it, because it's just now happening. By the time a lot of people listen to this podcast, they may have already transitioned into it, seeing it more frequent, but they totally, in my mind, killed interaction with a brand on the wall. Like here at CD Baby, we have people, we have close to 70,000 friends on Facebook. And so people are posting stuff on our wall all day long.
Yeah.
And other artists see it. People who come to our page, quite a few, and people will comment. And obviously people are seeing most of our content through the feed. But, you know, we get quite a few people there.
It's like a little forum.
But the new format totally sidelines that interaction, and it puts it into a little box with just the person's name and like maybe a few words from their first sentence, and they're just a list of like the last five. So no one's ever going to look at that. The interaction between, you know, people that are on your page won't happen anymore. At least in my mind, I don't see how it will. It might, you know, they said, I saw a stat that they released. It was something like only 18% of your followers actually see the content you're posting, you know, come down their feed. And it's not that they're not giving it to everybody. It's that, you know, people aren't all online when you post that or whatever. And so if only 18% of people are seeing it, you know that it's like a minuscule percentage of people actually landing on your page.
But now you can pay to make sure Facebook will ensure that 75% of your followers see your content if you pay them.
Yes, that's something that... they're doing, like, you can feature your post, and so, like, if you had an album release coming up and you wanted to make sure the maximum amount of people saw your post, you can pay, and they say that when you pay, up to, like, 87% of the people will see your post.
How much does it cost? Because sometimes I say really funny things on Facebook, and I get bummed that no one sees it.
That always sucks. You're like, that was the perfect line. Why didn't anybody say anything?
Just like you posted at the wrong time of day, or everybody's on vacation.
Yeah.
Like, I might just make use of it just so I seem funnier to my friends and family.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll try it out at CD Baby and see how it works, and report back, because, you know, we've...
They do that for Twitter, right? You promoted tweets, isn't that?
Yeah, I've never really used that, or I use Twitter only on my mobile phone, so it's like I never, they don't show them there, so I'm not sure how effective those are.
They've got the promoted videos you'll see in Google or on YouTube. Yeah.
So I guess it's kind of like that. So it might be something worthwhile if you've got a big event coming up that you try it out and see if everyone's posting. Yeah, because we've had articles that, you know, we post and it's been like going crazy on the blog, you know, with comments and stuff. But then we post on Facebook and it's just crickets. And we're like, well, obviously nobody saw this because it can't be that big a difference between the two audiences.
Yeah, so if any of you guys out there try the promoted what are they called? Facebooks? Posts? Promoted posts? Give us a call or an email and tell us how it treated you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what your thoughts are about the new Facebook timeline, if you're going to continue to promote your music there, if you've done anything interesting using the new tools that they have to promote your music and tell your story. If you're closing your Facebook account.
We should do a little CD Baby plug too now and say to make sure to put your music store.
That's right.
Top four apps, because only four apps or tabs show up on the timeline homepage now.
Yeah, we updated the logo for the music store, so it says music store nice and big. And before, in the last pages format, all your apps were on the left-hand column, and they were really small and easy to miss. Now that there's a bigger area, there's four things featured. Three of them you can move around. The Photos app you cannot change or move. The other ones, you click this little drop-down, and you can swap apps around. That's where all the other apps will be located when you click the drop-down. But yeah, make sure your music store is featured, and it definitely shouts music store so people know that, hey, click here to hear some music. And there's some other cool things you can do. You can pin posts and stuff, so you can get the URL from your music store and pin it to the top of your feed and things like that. So I'm sure more information will come out about the effectiveness of this, and we'll see how long Facebook holds on to it.
Speaking of pinning, if anyone has any stories about using Pinterest, the new up-and-coming social networking site, we'd love to hear stories of that, too.
I went to a marketing conference recently, and the guy doing the keynote said something interesting that made me think, okay, there's value to it. I'm not sure how or if, you know, our marketing efforts here at CD Baby, if we need to jump into Pinterest or not, but he said that, you know, social networks, Pinterest is one of the first, or if not the first, where it's based on what you want to see happen in the future, where Facebook, Twitter, and all the other social networks are about posting something. You know, you might be talking about what you want to do, but pretty much you posted something that's happened, and it's down your timeline, back in your past.
Right.
Where this is, you know, especially with... It became hugely popular with crafting communities and especially like women planning their wedding, posting things, collecting images of things that they'd like to do for that event. And so it's kind of a different take on, you know, these are people that are looking forward to something. And so marketers are, you know, if they have that information of what people are wanting to see happen, they can market to them effectively. So if there's a way to find out what I'm really wanting to have an indie band come play in my town.
Well, you know, you could tell. I mean, you could. Pinterest is sort of like scrapbooking. You could, you know, you could put together a whole Pinterest album of your show posters or your album covers or, you know, pictures of your audience. There's definitely things you can do. I haven't spent a lot of time with Pinterest, as I'm sort of asking your audience, but I think that it's, you know, it's one of the interesting things about it is that it's revolves around objects like pictures, and most social networks are focused on connecting with people, but this is about connecting with objects and using those objects as a way of connecting with people. So the focus is a little bit different than with other social networks. So it'll be curious to see how it grows.
It's similar to, like, you know, Instagram is a social network that's around photos and photography. And
yeah,
I imagine we'll see more of those pop up as is Facebook becomes this, you know, giant commercial behemoth that people want to go back to more, you know.
People want to go back to MySpace.
Yeah, not MySpace. They want to go back to something where it's like they can connect around something different, where it's not trying to be all things to all people. But anyway, you know, we should probably wrap this up pretty soon. But I think why all this matters, I'm sure someone listening right now is thinking, why the heck does this even matter and have to do with music and distribution and promotion and all that? There's the obvious things that this is where people are interacting and such, but then there's, you know, it's kind of this subversive thing where people like Google and Facebook are starting to use activity on these networks to drive search results and determine what gets featured and things like that. And that's why we've had to finally start paying attention to our Google Plus page here at CD Baby. Right. So some of those things are affecting how people find your music, and it's things that you may not realize that companies are using information and things to drive those search engines and results and things like that. And so it plays a big part in that as well.
The more people talk about you, the more they like you, pin you, tweet you, you know, whatever, Google Plus you, the more you will be found. The easier you will be found online. Social indicators are big for search engines now, like Google and Bing, and they also raise your ranking in the social websites themselves. So those are all indicators that will basically tell people and searchers and search engines that you're popular or not popular or whatever. I mean,
yep. So that's why.
And it's all about being popular.
It's all about being popular.
That's right. I just want to see my face everywhere.
You know what? Forget everything we said. Just go play a show.
That's right. I think somebody was... was one of our articles recently where someone was complaining about that. That's when people started talking about Pinterest, I was like, oh, good grief. I don't have room in my brain for another thing like that.
Just go play some guitar and forget about it.
Forget about it. No one was going to buy my music anyway. No, that's not true. My mom would buy it. So we'd like to hear your thoughts on the Facebook changes, how you're adapting, what you think about these companies grabbing so much power over the internet. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. We're going to have Chris back here on the West Coast with us next week, and we're going to try and knock out a couple discussions. So we did an article about the worst gig ever on the DIY Musician blog, and there was some hilarious posts. And I know we've had a phone competition a long time ago, people calling and leaving messages like that.
Yeah.
So we invite you to call in again with your worst gig, your terrible gig, or it's just fun. We've all been there. It's fun to laugh, cry together, and there were so many hilarious posts that we were going to share some of them and just have some light-hearted banter. And then I think we're also going to do an episode about a follow-up to our episode about sync licensing. We got a lot of questions about that, and so if you've got questions that you'd like to call in with, feel free to call in or email, and we'll try and answer a lot of those. So a lot of it will probably just be answering questions post CD Baby Sync licensing launch, and keep you updated and let you know some of the cool things and how to best take advantage of that.
Cool.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.